This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I'm glad to have you here. I'm glad you guys keep tuning in. Finally getting warmer. And believe it or not, this is the first podcast of 2024 that I am doing outside. It's Monday afternoon, beautiful day. I spent most of the day at my computer for work and just decided that I needed to change in scenery and going to run this episode outside because it's beautiful. So hopefully we'll keep the amount of dogs barking and loud noises and background noises to a minimum. I'm going to be running this episode by myself this week. I'm going to be talking about clover food plots, soil tests, and managing your soil tests, and a couple things to keep in mind as you're doing these preparations going into spring. So I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to jump right into the meat and potatoes of our episode. But before we do, as always, shout out to partners, Radix Hunting. Guys, if you are looking to get a new ground blind for spring turkey season, I would highly recommend checking out Radix's new ground blind. I'm really impressed with the silent windows. The view, the windows are, like I said, wide, great for bow shots, but you've got good mobility for gunshots. I really like the camo pattern, but really the silence and the simplicity of setting it up, it's spacious. Really happy with that. Check out Radix tree stands. As always, Radix cameras, M-Core cell cameras, the Gen 600 series. There's a lot of great options out there when you're talking about Radix hunting and improving your game of equipment. Check out radixhunting.com and let's get rolling on this week's episode. Now, before I get to this week's episode and the main part I want to talk about here, I do want to share something with you here. So first of all, I'm going to ask for some prayers this week to keep myself sane and my children safe, as this week their mother is going away for, I believe, 6 nights. She's going to visit her sister with the rest of her sisters and her mom, and I'm in full support of her doing that, but that's going to be a big leap for Dad to be taking care of the two boys. But this week won't be too bad. I'll have, it'll only be 3 work days by the time she leaves, as I have off on Good Friday. And I'm extremely thankful for that. I have off, I would rather have off 1 day, Good Friday, than to have off multiple holidays that are looked at a national level, you know, whether that's President's Day or Martin Luther King Day, or God forbid I say this, Juneteenth or something ridiculous like that. I would rather work all 3 of those days and have off this 1 day than vice versa, as I know many places are just that. They'll be working this Friday. And I'm thankful because of all the holidays that we celebrate in a calendar year. This coming weekend, Easter weekend, is absolutely the most important weekend for myself, my family, and really all of humankind, all mankind. We're not talking about the Easter Bunny. I'm talking about my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Guys, if you haven't looked into a relationship with Jesus Christ, if you don't know what that is all about, if you've been challenged by that, whatever, you know, let me be the first to say, reach out. I would love to talk to you about that. I would love to encourage you and walk through that. And I would love to share the gospel with you. But I'm sharing with you now that Christ died on a cross, a death that we all deserve, so that we could have eternal life, a chance at eternal life, a relationship with him, and it's truly the greatest gift we could ever be given. And one of the things that, you know, if you've listened to this show for a long time, if you've listened to me repeatedly, you know that I'm open to share the gospel. I'm open to share my faith in Christ. And one thing you might think is, I make it sound easy, or that life is great, and this is just, you know, it's just this honky-dory perfect world over here, and I've got it all figured out. And to be completely honest, I don't, not even close. I'm a mess. I've really been struggling, guys, lately. I've been struggling with a couple of different mental battles, a couple of different life hurdles, and overcoming knowing the best way to handle things as a father and a husband and an employee and a son and a brother and all this stuff, and how to do it in a righteous way. And let me be the first to say, I get it wrong repeatedly. And if you don't believe me, the folks that listen to the show who do know me know that I'm a very flawed individual, and I fall short constantly. You know, my biggest fear is that I do not portray myself as a Christian in my thoughts, but mostly in my words, in my deeds, that it's not going to reflect the glory that and reflect Christ's love, and that I'm not going to show what a Christian is to those around me who don't know. But the one thing that I will say is my words and my actions, getting those things right at the end of the day, while we all strive to be sanctified and grow closer and be more like Christ, we don't get to heaven by our words and by our actions. It's a gift that was given by God's design for His glory. And that's one of the hardest things for folks like myself who have accepted Christ but still struggle with the sinfulness of life and the evil desires that we have. Guess what, guys? Everybody that has walked the face of the earth has been through that, has struggled. If you don't believe me, you can look up and count so many instances in which mankind walked side by side with Christ and saw the miracles performed and yet still denied Him and still fell short. So if you are in a situation where you don't feel worthy, you don't feel good enough, guess what? You're just like everybody else. You're just like me. You're just like all of the folks that we read in the Gospels. And I encourage you to be lifted up by Christ and to celebrate this weekend with me. And I'm going to leave you guys with that. Please, I've said this before, I'll say again. Please do not ever hesitate to reach out for help. Reach out and talk to somebody. Reach out to me. Instagram, Facebook, Gmail, pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to talk with you. Now let's get to this week's episode, and I'm going to be talking about clover food plots. So clover food plots are probably one of the things that I see the most flaws with in development. Now they're food plots have complexities. And one of the complexities being clover food plots this time of year, clovers are perennials. You know, the ones I'm talking about, a perennial clover stand that we want to get started and keep year after year. Now's the time that I want to be thinking about setting those clover food plots up. And once a clover food plot is established, there's a couple little things you need to do throughout a year in order to keep that food plot going and keep it nice. But in my opinion, it's a relatively low maintenance thing you need to do. However, in order to get started, there's a lot of important steps that need to be taken. And if they're not taken, you can really start yourself off on the wrong foot. I find folks put the work in of planting and then think, okay, I'm done, and they'll step back for a few months. And that's the wrong thing to do with a young, new seedling clover field. There's some maintenance you need to do, because it's a clover, a perennial plant takes a longer time to establish than an annual plant, like oats or your brassicas or something like that that takes off very quickly. There's a time lag associated with that, and with, you know, when you have any kind of time lag, you could have weeds, you could have all kinds of problems that occur. So I'm going to give you a couple step-by-step things to think about for clover food plots. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about soil tests and just getting ready for the spring in general. But first thing I want, let's talk about new seedings. Let's talk about picking a food plot and planting it in a perennial clover field. So one of the most common things you hear guys talk about is frost seeding or snow seeding. I like doing those. They're not bad ways to do a minimum till or no-till clover food plot. But make sure when you do that, you're doing it when you truly have frost. The idea is to get a cold, cold morning below freezing, that the ground is hard, you get cracks in the soil from it freezing, but as the day warms up, the moisture starts to melt out and it thaws out and it works the seed into the seed that you broadcast in the early morning, works into those cracks and it thaws out and it actually gets incorporated into the top layer of soil. Depending on where you're at in Pennsylvania or in the Northeast, you might not have an opportunity to do a frost seeded food plot anymore. It looks like the next week or so, there's potential that at the latitude that I'm at, and keep in mind, the latitude I'm at is I'm in the southern half of Pennsylvania. And generally speaking, when I think about starting alfalfa in agricultural fields, which is very similar to clover, I basically break the state completely in half. The southern half of Pennsylvania, a lot of the time, guys are starting anywhere from the last week of March into the first 2 weeks of April. If you go into the northern half, it might start then, but it's usually pushed back about 10 days, give or take. You will notice the farther north you go. I mean, sometimes within a 1 to 2 hour driving distance of my house, I could be as much as 10 to 14 days behind where I'm at home, you know, driving north based on how warm it is and how far along crops are. So, if we don't have that forecast coming up and there's no sign of a frost, then you're probably going to be looking at doing something a little bit different to get a good established clover field. First thing I want to say too, before we switch, with frost seeding and with any type of planting, we got to have a nice seed bed. And what I'm getting at is we can't have competition. We can't have a bunch of leaf thatch from last fall covering up the soil because you're never going to get seed-to-soil contact. We can't have a ton of winter annual weed pressure. We can't have coal season grasses, something that's actively growing, because if we don't manage that up front and have soil to apply that seed to, those established weeds are just going to encroach and choke out that new seeding. So in a perfect world, you would have bare soil right now. Now, doesn't typically work for most food plots because I want to have something growing throughout the fall and winter. So unless you have a brand new cleared area that you did over winter and it's bare soil, you probably don't have a food plot that was just nothing from last fall. So whatever the case may be, I want to have bare soil, whether that's cleared ground, tilled ground, whatever. Then that's when you can get into your frost seeding. Snow seeding, we probably won't get that opportunity. I've never done snow seeding. I've heard people that talk about you get a March, late February snow, you know, somewhere around that time. And as it starts to melt, you get like an inch or so, and you broadcast your you broadcast your seed out into that existing snow that melts down in, and the freezing and thawing and melting of the snow gets down into the soil, and voila, you've got a clover food plot. Never did it. Can't say I've ever experienced it. I have frost-seeded clover, whether that was thickening up an existing stand or started from scratch. It works very well. But all I'm getting at is if we don't have frosty conditions here in the next few weeks, consider doing one of the next following things. And the next following things, I personally, if I'm going to start a perennial clover food plot, I like to use a little bit of tillage. And that might not even be tillage. It might be just as much as taking a chain, like a chain link fence with some weight on it, and dragging it just to scratch the soil surface. I want to just get enough soil exposed that I can broadcast my seed to touch it and time it that there's going to get a nice rainfall shortly afterwards. Regardless, we need to have bare soil. I always, if there's existing weed cover there, I always start off with herbicide. Roundup, usually a quart per acre of just generic glyphosate or Roundup, get that field clean. The other thing I like to do if I'm starting out planting my clover food plot is I'll put a little bit of oats in. I'll put in maybe somewhere between 15 and 25 pounds per acre of just a bin run farm store oats. And what that does a great job of is it's a nurse crop. It'll alleviate a little bit of wildlife pressure or wildlife browsing. It will be the first thing to establish and, you know, be something that the clover can kind of grow up with and follow behind it. It's going to help choke out weeds like chickweed or stuff like that. It's going to cover the soil a lot quicker. There's a lot of benefits to what I call a nurse crop, just a light rate of something to grow with that perennial clover. Because as I said earlier, it takes a longer time for perennial to get established and start. You got to be patient with these perennials when you get them started. Let's see what else here. I want to go back over timing of when you plant. Now, as you heard me say earlier, I talked about the beginning of April for clover food plots. There's a reason I'm planting perennial clovers, alfalfas now. If you are planting clovers when we're talking about planting corn and soybeans in mid-May, when the soil temperatures warm up to 50, 60 degrees, you've missed the opportunity, the optimum timing window for planting clover in the springtime, in my opinion, in this area, in this general area. And that could be, you know, for most of Pennsylvania into parts of Maryland and Virginia up into New York, you know, anywhere in that latitude, plus or minus a few weeks. But I say the beginning of April, the first 2 weeks of April, because when you get into May and the soil temperatures warm above 50 degrees, you are going to have a prolific growth of ragweed, pigweeds, lamb's quarter, warm season grasses, all vigorous annual plants that take off very quickly, depending on what type of weeds you have in your seed bed. And as I said multiple times, clover is a slow establishing plant. It will germinate in colder temperatures than those weeds. Ideally, I want to get the clover started before those weeds germinate and get it, you know, maybe an inch or two, you know, tall, maybe more depending on the weather. And then when you start to get those summer annual weeds germinating, you can terminate them with herbicide a whole lot quicker, a whole lot easier. And also, your clover is probably, with it being ahead, it's probably going to choke out those new seeding, summer annuals a whole lot quicker. It's going to probably choke them out a whole lot better because there's something already growing there. If you're looking to simplify your food plot system while enhancing the quality of your soil, you need to check out Vitalize Seed Company. Vitalize provides top quality seed blends designed to fit into their 1-2 planting system. The system has been designed to allow highly diverse plant species to grow synergistically, optimizing nutrient uptake and cycling the way God intended. Reduce your inputs, build your soil, and maximize the quality tonnage for the wildlife in your area. Find out more about this system and get your seed at vitalizeseed.com. And be sure to check them out on Instagram and Facebook. Radix Hunting was founded on premium grade trail cameras and continues striving to produce the best cellular and conventional trail cameras on the market today. The Gen 600 is a second generation camera from the Gen series line. With premium video and audio recording capabilities, this product has become well respected as the HD video trail camera. In addition to the Gen series cameras, their M-Core cellular camera has all the features of a quality cell camera at an affordable price. Along with their cameras, they offer stick and pick trail camera accessories to allow you to set your cameras just right. You can find it all at radixhunting.com and be sure to follow Radix Hunting on Instagram and Facebook. Want to check out Radix cameras in person? Stop in at Little Mountain Outfitters in Richland, Pennsylvania and have a peek. Now, back to the show. Now, the other thing you got to keep in mind too, when you plant later, when you plant into early, mid, late May for a clover, we need ample moisture, continuous moisture for that slow perennial to get started. And when you're planting that late, you're getting awfully close to when we get some very, very hot summer sun, maybe a lack of rainfall, and that's the death of all perennial plantings, is lack of moisture and too much heat. They're going to get, those young plants are going to die out. And that's the that's one of the biggest failures that I see in new seeding clover fields. So take it from me, if you're going to start in the springtime, now's the time to get ready. And we're going to talk about getting the soil tests and getting, you know, looking at checking all the boxes there here in a little bit. Before we get into weed management with clover, real quick, make sure you are looking at your seed tags. Just make sure that you're calculating your seed rate, which means you're taking your percentage of pure live seed, you're also taking your germination rate, and you're getting the amount of pounds of that particular seed out that needs to be. If it's calling for, let's just say, 15 pounds per acre, and you've got a pure live seed of 50%, well, you need to put double that on and then figure your germination rate. So keep that in. The other thing too, when you're looking at choosing a clover food plot seed blend, pay attention to what varieties of clover are in those mixes. Now, I'm not going to get into the weeds of which one's better and everything else, because in my opinion, it doesn't matter. I don't really have the greatest knowledge to know that one perennial clover is better than another. I personally like diversity of clovers. I do the same thing in hay fields with grasses. If we have a diverse mix of grasses, if certain grasses like certain conditions and vice versa, you're going to have a full stand regardless based on those conditions. And if you take that same logic with clover, it works out pretty well. The other thing too is make sure when you're buying your seed, you're getting a clover blend that accomplishes your goals. If you have a lot of annual clovers like Balanza, Berseem, Crimson, Arrowleaf, you know, anything like that, if there's a high percentage of those in your perennial clover mix, they're going to die. They're an annual. They're going to die after, you know, their life cycle begins. Then you're going to have a gap there that weeds are going to fill in. So make sure you're getting a good percentage of perennial clover. Do your research on the seed blend seed companies. That's pretty important for getting a long-term established planting. When it comes to herbicides, I typically am using one of four herbicides depending on what type of weeds I have. So if you have a pure stand clover field, nothing else with it, if you have grass weeds in your field, the best herbicide you can be using is a chemical called clethodim. There's a lot of trade names for that, Select, Arrow, that's just to name a few. There's a lot of other ones, but the chemical is called clethodim. And clethodim is a grass-specific herbicide. It won't kill any broadleaf weeds. It won't kill your clover, anything like that. And use rates for annual grasses are usually 9 to 16 ounces per acre. Perennial grasses, they're going to be 12 to 32 ounces per acre. Generally speaking, I'm a minimum of 10 ounces per acre on most applications. Keep in mind what species you have, and also keep in mind how tall are they. If you're taller than 12 inches, I typically add 1 ounce per inch over 12 is how I handle that. So if it's a 14-inch tall weed, I'm definitely going to be adding 14 ounces or maybe the maximum rate that you have for an annual grass. And then same concept for perennial grasses. Perennials are usually a little bit heavier need for dosage because they have a deeper root. So clethodim herbicide, you can get that at most farm supply stores or ag supply stores. Great herbicide for that. Now the next one, my preferred broadleaf herbicide for a straight clover field, the chemical name is imazapyr. I-M-A-Z-E THAPYR. Some of the common trade names that you'll hear are Pursuit, Thunder, and Whitetail Institute has Slay, which is, I believe, a Mazapir. I personally would rather use Thunder or Pursuit because even though you're buying it in a higher quantity per ounce, it's way cheaper than buying it in that small container. If you price it out per ounce what you're getting, it's ridiculous how the difference is between the small jug versus the larger jugs like Pursuit or Thunder. Use rates for that, 3 to 6 ounces per acre. Generally speaking, the vast majority of the herbicides that are the times that I've used this herbicide for clover or alfalfa, it's a 4 ounce per acre use rate. Now, there's a third herbicide you can use that I don't use as often, but it's the one that's more common because it's cheaper and it's a little bit easier to get. Pursuit, you usually have to go to an ag retailer for to get. Butyrac, you can get at a lot of different farm stores. 2,4-DB is Butyrac, and it is rated a use rate of 1 to 3 quarts per acre. Now, really what this comes down to is what weeds are you trying to get? What broadleaf weeds are you trying to kill? Because both of these will manage broadleaf weeds. Pursuit and Mazapir does a better job of bringing down ragweeds, pig weeds, lamb's quarters. The 2,4-DB, the bigger those weeds get, the more when you look at that label, it runs towards suppression. When you get weeds, some of those weeds that are taller than 4 inches, you're not getting a control out of those. And I've seen 2,4-DB miss a lot of summer annual broadleafs or maybe a biennial. It's not going to get a thistle or things like that. Timing is everything, and we're going to talk about timing in just a second here. But I haven't used Butyrac, but regardless of what I'll tell you is do some research. Look at what weeds you have in your food plots. Don't blanket apply. Learn to identify what weeds you have. Read the labels of these herbicides, and you'll find out which is going to be the better case for you. I will tell you, in the vast majority of the range that I work in, both agriculturally and food plot related, Imazapyr does a better job. The other thing I wanted to share with you is if you are somebody like me that likes chicory, I love chicory. I think chicory is, I personally won't put a food plot in of clover without chicory. That's how much I like it. I've seen deer just flock to it and I enjoy using it. You can use a herbicide that is labeled for both chicory and clover to kill certain broadleaf weeds. It is a sister chemistry to Pursuit and Mazapyr. The herbicide name, the chemical is called Mazamox. The common trade name you'll hear is Raptor herbicide. I'm usually using this at 4 to 5 ounces per acre. So if you want to use that, look it up. Again, that's going to be an ag retailer product. And the other thing that I'm going to give you a warning on, it's not cheap. Generally speaking, you're talking about a minimum of a gallon per per jug. You can't get it in a smaller than that. So both Imazapyr and Imazamox, if you have a quarter acre food plot, this probably isn't going to be something you're going to do. But if you have a couple acres of clover food plots, if you have a co-op or anything like that, or multiple people you know that use these herbicides or would use these herbicides for clover food plots, you can buy a jug together and divvy it out and save yourself some money. The other thing, too, is if you know any farmers that have alfalfa, talk to them and say, hey, what herbicides are you using? Maybe you can get a little bit from them. It's a little bit of a cost-effective way to get a better product. Let's talk about timing of herbicides a little bit. Biggest issue I see when we're talking about using these herbicides that I'm talking about, clethodim, imazamox, imazapyr, timing is the biggest issue. People spray these herbicides way too late to get the control you need. This isn't Roundup, it's not glyphosate. Glyphosate is a non-selective weed killer. There's very few weeds that it won't kill. And you can do a pretty good job of taking large weeds down with Roundup. I mean, I've taken stuff out waist high and taller with glyphosate. The label and on most of these herbicides that I'm talking about in clover, your use rate, you want to get between 2 and 8 inch tall weeds, preferably less than 8 inch, preferably be 4 to 6. Anything beyond that, you're starting to get a lot of energy behind those plants. Their root system is just as developed underground as it is above ground, and some of those weeds can metabolize this herbicide and make it through and not completely die. So after you plant your food plot, after you plant it in the first 2 weeks of April, give or take some weather, let's make sure that you're walking those fields. You're looking to see how is the clover coming in. Once those clover plants have 2 true leaves off of their main stem, you can spray these herbicides. And I would rather you spray early on those small plants than wait until they're getting choked out by weeds that are that tall. You're going to have better success if you spray in the first 15 to 30 days after planting. Just walk your fields, get an idea. And the easiest way to do it, when the weeds are 2 to 4 inches tall, it's time to spray. Spray it and let Mother Nature do its rest. Hopefully you got a good stand planting, you know, all the weather worked out and it's up and running here. That's going to give you your best chance for weed management in herbicides. Now, if we're talking established clover food plots, you're talking about maintaining those, I'm typically doing the same approach with weeds as I am that new seeding. I'm going to go out in May sometime, probably mid-May, maybe early May, whenever the weeds are 2 to 6 inches tall, and I'm going to spray that herbicide. Don't wait until June when stuff's knee-high and higher, because you're going to have limited success. Right now is also a great time, too. I'm going to backtrack a little bit. If you have a food plot that's in clover that you've had for a few years, you can thicken clover food plots up by broadcasting seed into those sections, and many of you have probably done that. Whether that's frost seeding, whether that's just seeding it before rain in a bare spot, you can get stuff to grow in. Just keep in mind the timing of when you kill those weeds, because you're not supposed to spray these herbicides on plants that don't have, they need to have those two true leaves on their main stem there. If you spray it younger than that, you can damage those plants when they're young. But as long as they have those leaves, you're good. I'm typically spraying in the springtime, and I'm also going to spray sometime late summer, early fall. And I have already sprayed in between that. Usually it's 2 times a year as we approach the early fall with those late developing, you know, or early developing winter annual type plants or cool season plants. I want to get it in the fall, and then of course the summer plants. Depends on the moisture, depends on your deer pressure, how much they're browsing your clover food plots, if you would have to spray in the summertime a third time in between that or not. I've done both. I would rather use herbicide to get rid of weeds than mowing. There's a lot of people that recommend mowing clover, and you can use mowing as a tool, but most of the time I see clover get mowed at the wrong time or mowed the wrong way, or just the application is off. Think about this. You put all this time, effort, money into establishing a clover food plot. It starts to grow up really nice. typically when I see wildlife use it the most, depends on your area, there's a lot of factors, but typically I'll see that start to slack off as we get an uptick in summer annual plants. You know, once we get into, you know, late May, June, July, I won't see clover get browsed as hard, and it'll kind of grow up and maybe get a little bit woolier than it is in the spring and the fall. And people think, well, it's starting to mature, I got to mow it. You don't have to mow it. Dr. Craig Harper did a study where they took plant tissue samples at all different stages of a clover food plot's life. You know, all the way from new seeding, all the way up to heading out, mature, and the nutritional content in those plants remained the same throughout the entire growth state, you know, the entire life cycle of that crop. Now, I understand that palatability changes the longer that matures. I just don't see many clover food plots maturing. And even if they would head out in the summertime and mature, they're going to reflush again and restart the whole process. If you mow a clover food plot, I mow at the highest setting possible most times, and that's just to clip tops off. And if there's weeds that are above that, I just want to clip the top of those weeds and allow the clover to get a little bit of kind of a reset. But I'm not setting the mower deck really low. I definitely don't want to cut over half of what's there. I'm talking about just the top level, just clipping the tops a little bit. And again, most of the time I'm not even doing this. But when you mow it closer to the ground than that, all you do is open up the sunlight, potentially bare spots, to allow weeds to grow. And keep in mind, it depends on the weed you're trying to kill. Timing is important of the mowing in order to get to kill, but most weeds are just going to be like your yard, that they'll just keep growing back. So to me, there's a lot to be lost and not much to be gained most of the time when it comes to mowing a clover food plot. Last thing I'm going to touch on for clover food plots, whether that's a new seeding or established, make sure you, again, get a soil sample to really know what to do to address the soil fertility. And I was going to go into that this week, but I just decided I think I'm going to hold off. We're going to do that next week. We'll have an episode where I'm going through managing soil samples, soil fertility, understanding fertilizers, understanding limestone, and, you know, the timing and application of those things. But if you have an established clover field, let's assume that you did that first part. You addressed the soil summary, your soil test, based off of, you take a soil test, you are going to plant clover, you address the recommendations that it has. Once you do that and you go a few years down the road, what can you do to enhance that clover food plot or continue to make it almost top dress it? Can you fertilize it as you go? And the answer to that is yes. And typically what I'm doing is I'm just using potassium, potash, 0060. If you want to be organic and you don't want to use synthetic fertilizer that's, you know, made from a chloride product, you can use sulfate of potash or, you know, something like that. Personally, I have nothing against using synthetic fertilizer. It's a tool, and I have very few issues with putting potash on a clover food plot or an alfalfa field. The reason I'm doing that is most of the time when you look at the nutrient taken up the most and removed, that's the one you see removed the most, and that's where a lot of your tonnage is coming from. I don't typically put much phosphorus fertilizer surface applied. And the reason for that is phosphorus, it's mined phosphate, and it's a rock fertilizer. It takes a long time for it to break down, and it doesn't leach very far. I don't really see a whole lot of use from a granular rock phosphate being applied to clover food plot. So mostly when it comes to bulk volume fertilizer, potash is my go-to. Now, one thing you can do, and I would encourage you to do, I'm not somebody who likes to brag up foliar fertilizing a lot. I would rather do everything I possibly can to manage the soil and provide nutrients that way. However, this is a great opportunity to use a foliar fertilizer. I typically am looking for something that has boron, maybe some liquid potassium, maybe some liquid sulfur. Those are a couple of the elements that are most important to me. And any other micros that are in that mix are an additional bonus, in my opinion. One thing I will sometimes have tried and had decent results with is, believe it or not, putting just a tad bit of synthetic nitrogen in the fall. Now, a lot of people will wrinkle their nose up to that, and they'll say, "Wow, you can't put nitrogen on something. You're going to burn it, or you're going to do this, or you're going to do that." And my experience has not been that at all. If you put too much on, you can. I'm talking no more than 50 to 75 pounds per acre, a very small amount of nitrogen to that clover. Now, again, clover's a legume. It produces its own nitrogen. But if you do it at the right time and you can make it almost like a luxury consumption sort of thing, that's a situation where nitrogen is directly related to protein. And if you can provide it a little bit additional nitrogen, you can push dark green leafy protein growth a little bit easier, quicker. Right, wrong, or indifferent, you can disagree with me. I'm not being very technical. But there is something to be said on forages. When you apply nitrogen to them, you can increase the protein. If you increase the protein, you can increase the attraction. And I'll typically do that close to hunting season. I don't do that now. That's nothing that I would worry about doing now. Just a little thing I've tried and seen good results. If you don't believe me, try half of a food plot and then observe it and see what the deer do. After you put that nitrogen on in September, watch a deer. Do they come out one side of the food plot more than another? Maybe, maybe not. All right. This is why I don't like doing food plots by my, or yeah, food plots. I don't like doing podcasts by myself most of the time because I think I ramble on and question how long I should stay on certain topics. My mind's racing on a million things, and I probably spent more time talking on certain things than I needed to. So let's just wrap this up here, and we'll revisit some soil sampling and fertility things next week. Just to recap, if you are starting a new seeding food plot, now's the time to get ready. You're running out of time if you want to do a frost seed. But if you've got any mornings coming up in the next week that you've got below 30-some degrees and you're getting morning frost, get out there, make sure your field is bare, you blow the leaves off, you've managed the weeds appropriately, whether it's herbicide or tillage, broadcast your seed into that and let her go. If you're not, I typically do a little bit of tillage just to get bare soil, and I'm not talking deep tillage, just enough to scratch the surface and get that clover seeded. I want to do it beginning of April when I'm talking about, tilling and planting. First half of April. Don't wait too long. You're going to have issues with summer annuals and rainfalls and temperatures. Get it established. And then once you get that planting going, walk your fields, make sure you're paying attention. How far along is the clover? What growth stage? How many leaves does each plant have? When it has a certain amount of leaves, then you know it's time that you can spray herbicide. And when you spray herbicide, you want to do it how tall? 2 to 6 inch weeds is typically where I'm at. Measure the weeds, Keep in mind, some of the tools you have in a tractor or your side-by-side or whatever, when you're going around your property, most of those tools that you have might be 6 to 8 inches tall. So if you put it next to a weed and it's taller than that, well, it's a little taller than 6 to 8 inches. So timing is everything. I went through the herbicides. We're going to talk about fertilizers next week. Be leery to mow your clover. It's a tool to just clip the tops at a certain time. The timing that I typically do it is late summer, early fall. I'm not mowing it in May, June. really not even mowing in the first half of July, probably the second half of July. If you manage with herbicides and you get good, adequate moisture and you manage your fertility, let the clover do its work. Same thing if you have chicory in there. The other thing to recapping is I like to put oats in for a nurse crop when I'm planting. I think that's enough for this episode, guys. Most of those things will get you rocking and rolling on clover, hopefully give you a piece of information that you didn't know at one point in time or another. And yeah, I think that's going to put a wrap on it. So, hey, have a good week. Enjoy this Easter weekend. Do something with family. Take some time. Reflect. Be quiet. Have a conversation. Have a prayer. And I'll be praying for you. And again, if I could ask anything, have some prayers for me and my kids this weekend. I really hope that we can have a good weekend. I don't do anything stupid as the alone dad here. We'll get through it here, but by the grace of God. So, thanks, guys. Have a good week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.